Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we welcome Sam Baker of River. Sam is working on research over there, and he put out a fantastic report on business adoption. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, Sam, talk to us about what you do at River and then get right into why you created this report.
Sure. Well, I only joined about 5 months ago at River. I'm focused on research. And we put out a couple reports every year on topics that we find most interesting within the Bitcoin space. And this past month, we decided to release a report on business Bitcoin adoption, because from our vantage point, businesses have been one of the primary adopters of Bitcoin in 2024.
Well, I know you want to drive home the point here that this isn't just a MicroStrategy story, even though they get all the headlines, that Bitcoin adoption is really coming from a grassroots origin, but more importantly, it's coming from everywhere in places you might not expect. So what are some of the key findings? And then we'll start here with this slide that you have on Bitcoin ownership distribution.
Sure. Yeah. So before I started looking into business Bitcoin adoption, I was a little bit skeptical of how deep this movement would actually be. When just looking at the MicroStrategies of the world, I was a little bit skeptical of how replicable Michael Saylor and what he's doing is to other companies around the US. But the more I looked into it and spoke with small businesses and family-run businesses, I actually realized that there's a lot more than meets the eye initially. And, you know, River, for example, we serve over 1,000 businesses. That number has grown quite a bit this year. And so it's really something we've taken interest in. And I think, you know, the primary business adopters of Bitcoin this year have really been the small and medium-sized businesses that are 15 employees or less, run by families. You know, they use the business entity as a savings vehicle to pass down from generation to generation. As for the ownership distribution chart that we put out, businesses right now are, from the perspective of that chart, just a small sliver of total Bitcoin owners. I think it's somewhere around 3% of total Bitcoin holdings, which is less than the ETFs already. It's less than, you know, depending on what time you're looking at it, governments. But that number of business Bitcoin holdings has grown by almost 600% in the past 4 years. And it is growing by, you know, more than the block subsidy each day. And that's a trend that we expect to continue.
And Sam, from my perspective, businesses and the type of businesses that you describe are an extension of the individual. So for me, as Bitcoin grows in its prominence as an asset class, you probably have some of the individuals, which in this chart is 57% of Bitcoin ownership. You just have that 60% come down to 57%. And those families that previously owned Bitcoin as individuals are now transferring that Bitcoin into their business entities, or instead of replenishing their, or instead of reinvesting profits into US dollar based investment activity, they save in Bitcoin and perhaps are spending from a personal, you know, pile of money, or however you want to describe it. But what are your thoughts there in terms of just Bitcoin growing and having businesses now just be really an extension of the individual wanting to protect property? So in the same way that individuals that grow businesses keep assets owned by the business for tax reasons, for legal reasons, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin following the same adoption path there?
Yeah, that's a great point. Many of the businesses that currently have a Bitcoin strategy, I think, are exactly right. It started as an individual that fell down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, has a strong conviction in Bitcoin's future as a reserve asset, and they decided to continue that strategy onto their business. And for many reasons, if you're an individual that is also a small business owner, the business entity is a more effective way to stack Bitcoin and then to pass it down from generation to generation. both from tax reasons, but also just from an operational and financial standpoint of your business. It really provides a great buffer against cyclical downturns and can help hedge against a lot of the business risks that traditional treasury assets fail to do.
The Bitcoin Layer is sponsored by Unchained, the undisputed leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults in which you own 2 of 3 keys and you gain a Bitcoin security partner. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage via Unchained's trading desk and eliminate all exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA in the industry, where you can convert your existing 401ks or retirement accounts to Unchained, all while keeping control of your Bitcoin private keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Talk to Unchained today. Go to unchained.com/TBL for $100 off when you sign up. Ifani is a secure mobile carrier that helps prevent SIM swaps. SIM swaps are sophisticated social engineering attacks in which hackers steal your phone number by gaining access to your information. Ifani lets you sign up with AT&T or Verizon through them, but Ifani protects your mobile number from being stolen by hackers. So make sure you're protecting those online accounts. Go to ifani.com/TBL for $99 off when you sign up. Yeah, and I know you want to talk about some of the traditional strategies versus Bitcoin. We'll get to that here in a second. Sam, my question to you is one that I think is on many people's minds as they try to understand Bitcoin, which is Bitcoin an asset or a currency or a commodity or a combination? And it is semantics. I mean, I could make an argument yes or maybe for each one of those things. And it is in many ways a combination of these things, because it's a new thing that hasn't existed before. But how do you answer that question to newbies? Because I think it's important to keep trying new ways to explain this.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would love to hear your answer to that question and your take. I think my answer would really depend on who I'm speaking to. If it's a business that is, you know, very involved with cross-border payments, or maybe they have contracts that they need to settle in a third world country, they might be thinking of that as a currency. And many businesses are using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, although that's in much more niche use cases. I would say, to paint a broader brush on what Bitcoin is, I think most businesses are thinking of it as property or as a reserve asset. From an accounting and tax perspective, it's very crucial to think of it as a commodity, because that has implications for how much Bitcoin you can hold in your balance sheet, why some businesses, for example, don't hold gold, because it's very difficult to hold physical gold as a hedge, or own the ETFs, which are a security, which is why gold perhaps hasn't had the traction with businesses as one may have expected over the past 20 years. But for most businesses, I would say, it's thinking of it as digital property and an asset that can preserve value over time.
Absolutely. Well, my answer really, it's similar to yours in that it's property first, and property is an asset. And the reason it's property has to do with Bitcoin's code and the way that we own private keys and that relationship, the ownership relationship that we have with the software is property-like. You can use the property as a currency because the protocol itself allows transactions. So it is both, and that is the way that I like to answer it. But explaining it as property first is, I think, a good way to introduce Bitcoin, because people understand it as transactional, which is intuitive, I think, because people do transactions all the time, but they don't necessarily deal in property all the time. And so that's more of an abstract concept. That's the way I would answer that one, Sam. And I do want to say that in terms of the commodity treatment on balance sheets. Are you guys looking at accounting regulations that may be coming down for companies, and are people asking you those questions, and how are you advising on that type of dynamic?
Yeah, so we actually ran a survey of our business clients to understand more about who they are, what size they are, how many stakeholders were required to actually make the decision to buy Bitcoin. And one of the most interesting findings we had was that the largest concern that our business clients had prior to buying Bitcoin was actually its accounting and tax treatment, because this is a field that has been evolving over the past few years. It's hard to wrap your head around if you're not used to dealing with commodities or with this new asset called Bitcoin. And one of the key catalysts that we think is driving a lot of the business Bitcoin adoption this year is some of those accounting updates that have happened through the FASB that make it a lot more clear what Bitcoin's accounting treatment is, how it's taxed, how it shows up on your financial statements. And it's very clear right now that Bitcoin is accounted for as a commodity. And specifically with the FASB update that was announced last December, it goes into place this December, Bitcoin holdings are no longer subject to punitive valuation remeasurements. And now it can be measured at fair value from quarter to quarter, which makes it a lot easier for investors to understand the value of the company that they're investing in. And it also makes it a lot more comfortable for key decision makers at businesses to make the decision to adopt a Bitcoin strategy.
If people want a full deep dive onto the FASB regulation and what fair value accounting could potentially mean for all of corporate finance, I mean, the entire theory of corporate finance, definitely go check out our episode with Michael Saylor, in which he talks about this corporate finance revolution that might be coming due to these FASB regulation changes and the fair value accounting of Bitcoin. So I would point people to that. And on a similar topic, Sam, let's go to these couple charts here: aggregate business Bitcoin holdings, public versus private companies, public companies with Bitcoin holdings, just the chart by itself, and tell us what your thoughts are on these numbers here. And of course, we have to account for MicroStrategy, understanding that they're the big player here. But I don't want to over-focus on one company and one individual's strategy, corporate strategy. What he describes is so important, and he wants others to adopt it. And that's why he's trying to make public as much as he can. I'm talking about Saylor, of course, these FASB regulations that are going to change things from his perspective.
Yeah, so just looking at the charts of aggregate business Bitcoin holdings and the number of public companies that have adopted a Bitcoin strategy, I think for the most part, they speak for themselves. Going under the hood a little bit, to your point, MicroStrategy and Tether have accounted for almost 85% of all Bitcoin purchases by businesses in 2024. And so it is very skewed to the larger companies when you're just looking at the aggregate amount of Bitcoin. A much harder number to arrive on is, you know, how many private and small businesses are adding Bitcoin to their balance sheets, even if it's just a couple thousand dollars, which can be very meaningful for a family-run restaurant or business or construction maker. And unfortunately, I would love to get that data and be able to show just the breadth of business Bitcoin adoption. Unfortunately, the best we can show is just our own insights from River. I would guess this trend would continue of businesses just stacking Bitcoin and the overall ownership of businesses growing steadily in the future. But I think the thing to focus on over the next few years is not so much MicroStrategy as it is all the other businesses, both public and private, that are making an initiative into Bitcoin, however large or small.
Definitely. I think in terms of measurement, it's one of the difficult, it's one of our difficulties generally with Bitcoin because of the address structure of the blockchain. We just don't have a great idea of who and how much. We just have these slices of UTXOs, and we have mapping, which, I mean, we don't have to talk about that today. It's a science in and of itself, trying to map UTXOs to individual companies, people, countries. But understanding how many people worldwide own Bitcoin is it's almost the same challenge as understanding how many companies own Bitcoin worldwide, because there's no real way to know. There are just surveys, there are estimates, there is mapping and heuristics.
Yeah, I want to say the best estimates right now as for the number of individuals that own Bitcoin range anywhere from 80 million to 350 million, which is a very wide margin for error. And to your point, most of these methodologies, it's the best we have, but it's just looking at any exchange that has perhaps reported the number of monthly active users they have, extrapolating, you know, what percentage of those own Bitcoin, how many of those have deposits on multiple exchanges. So it's a very impossible task, but if you follow the same methodology year over year, you are seeing pretty profound growth in the individual class, in addition to businesses as well.
And that's important too. The growth rate within the statistics is potentially a higher signal than the aggregate number of individuals, because yes, I agree with that range, and I tend to say a number around 200 million people, just because it's somewhere in the middle of those of that range. We don't know exactly. Sam, let's talk about the anatomy of a typical business treasury. You know, as a former money markets trader myself, this was my bread and butter. So actually being in control of the funds of a treasury account at a corporation is what I did. So I got to see the daily cash needs, daily cash flows in and out. And because you have as much in as you do out, a treasury isn't a place to build an investment portfolio. It's a place to keep liquid and just to keep cash and to move things in and out. So as a fiduciary, it was my job to own short bills, repo exposure that's overnight, commercial paper, and other sorts of fixed income instruments that either mature quickly or I could sell for par and make sure that I get a little bit of yield along the way. So that's the anatomy of a typical business treasury from my perspective and my practitioner side. Now I'm wondering, you know, as a Bitcoin company, how are you dealing with that dynamic and explaining to companies why they should have some of the treasury in Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's a tricky subject, because unlike an individual investment portfolio where a lot of IRAs may recommend just a 60-40 or, you know, a standard cookie cutter model, it really depends on the business's size, their ownership structure, how profitable they are, what industry they're in, because business treasuries, while many businesses are, you know, very heavy into low risk, very stable money market funds and the like, it really depends from business to business. And so one of the tricky things with writing this report is figuring out how to provide those types of insights, which is one of the reasons why we decided to highlight a variety of specific companies that are in different industries, and just going a little bit more into detail into like their unique position in a treasury. Sorry, I think I forgot your question.
No, but, the question, Sam, really comes down to, of course, every business has its own dynamic, its own need for liquidity. And from my perspective as a trader, I was dealing with very large corporations. So some of the largest tech companies right now, they had pockets of a few billion here, a few billion there with different money market managers. And, you know, we were one of those, we were one of those managers, and I was trading some of those accounts. Now, those businesses, they stack investments in many other ways. They own stocks in, you know, other portfolios. They own businesses. They own a family of businesses. They're trying to buy startups all the time. Their treasury accounts are just for ins and outs, payroll, bond, if they raise a bond, cash through a bond issuance, that money comes into the treasury. It goes right back out for either share buybacks or to purchase a company. But these small companies, and I'm looking here at your examples of businesses using Bitcoin slide here with Peter McCormick's Football Club, River, of course, and a few other companies here. How are they thinking about Bitcoin as, again, in that asset versus currency conversation? And are they just thinking, oh, let me take a sleeve here and I'm going to treat my treasury as a treasury plus investment portfolio plus hedge? Because you mentioned the hedging. Right. So you can take it away with this example slide.
Sure. So many businesses that are mature and maybe in a state of very predictable margins, very predictable cash flows, they don't have a huge reason to build a massive treasury and have a lot of excess assets. They would rather pay that out to shareholders via dividends or buybacks. But there are a lot of businesses out there that have very good reasons to have excess reserves in their treasury and on their balance sheet for a variety of reasons. So one of the examples on this page is a home builder called Summer Place Homes. And in the home building industry, it is very cash intensive because you're making an upfront investment that you're not going to see payouts for multiple years. It's also a cyclical industry, and it is vulnerable to just broader economic cyclicality. And so these businesses, I would compare it very much to a lot of the businesses in the crypto industry that have blown up in the past bear markets. The businesses in the home building industry that have been able to figure out a way to preserve value on their balance sheets across business cycles by investing in non-related asset classes have been the ones to survive. And for home builders, many of these have invested in index funds, in real estate, which happens to be not that aligned with home building, ironically. But more and more home builders are turning to Bitcoin because it is the least correlated with the home building industry. It is very liquid. And so if they have a line of credit and they need to top up margin with their bank, they can do that very easily. And so that's just one example. For River, the company I work for, as another example, we're a startup that raised quite a bit of money over the past few years. And many startups have many years of runway until they're expected to be profitable. And in the meantime, they have to maintain a large treasury to meet their expenses for, you know, 2, 3, 5, sometimes 10 years. And so the more you can preserve the value of the capital that you raised as a startup, the more runway you have. And that's an approach that River's taken and that I think quite a few other startups would benefit from. Looking at technology companies, I don't believe we had a case study on any pure technology company, maybe with the exception of Block. But many of the big tech companies out there have massive cash stockpiles, such as Apple, such as Meta or Google. And tech companies have very good reasons to hold excess cash. Most of the valuation of their company is based on intangible assets, intellectual property. And it's very hard to raise money based on that alone. And so if you can have a large cash buffer, it can make your financial operations much more smooth. Also, if you expect to be engaging in M&A or in the case of the tech companies, if something like AI comes around and you want to be able to immediately invest billions in building out an AI line, it makes a lot of sense to have a large cash stockpile, which is probably why Apple has maintained a treasury of over $150 billion over the past decade. But at the same time, I think, you know, in the case of those tech companies specifically, they would be better off perhaps diversifying some of their treasury into inflation-resistant assets as opposed to purely allocating that into very short-term, risk-mitigated, stable assets.
Absolutely. And I traded the money market funds of Apple and Meta, but when it was still Facebook, both of those companies. So I got to see what they had in their portfolios. It's fascinating watching companies like that allocate what their mandates are, which, you know, they vary. I remember an individual market maker that one of those two companies would not allow us to do business with because of something said at the board. So there's all sorts of individual mandates within these companies, and every company has its own. But one of the things that I think all Bitcoiners eventually understand, and we're showing it with our charts and our data, is that if you hold for over 3.5 years, you're going to be in the green on your Bitcoin position empirically, historically. And so, like you're saying, if you want to hold capital, you want to hold cash, and you have a plan to do it, either because you're a startup and you need to secure your runway, or if you anticipate acquisitions in the future that you have to start planning for now, why not get involved with Bitcoin in your treasury? The volatility of Bitcoin's price makes Bitcoin treasury adoption of Bitcoin in your treasury, corporate treasury, a foreign concept. We understand that. But Sam's research is here to guide companies to show them that it's not just something you should automatically reject because of perceived volatility, that there's merit here. Sam Baker of River Research, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing this report. We're going to have these slides up for people, and we'll provide a link to your research report in the show notes. Please tell people where else to find you online and what else you're working on.
Thanks very much, Nick. You can find me on Twitter at MacroMule. You can look at our business content on river.com/learn. And I love your content, Nick. I'm a fan. So thanks for having me on again.
Of course. Sam, nice to have you. And we'll catch you guys next time.
All right. Take care.